Today's episode of the Gestalt Education Show is brought to you by three of our favorite sponsors, Human Locomotion, Core 360 Bell, and Dynamic Disc Designs. All the information can be found below. By now, you have definitely heard us talk about them, so check out the show notes, click the links, use the codes, and make sure you support our favorite people. As always, we got a great episode lined up for you today, and thanks for tuning in. Everyone, welcome to another episode of the Gestalt Education Show. We're back on home turf, another solo episode, Brett. We said this is kind of our New Year's resolution, so we're sticking to it. So you're gonna hear more of these, of just Brett and I kind of talking through things. We've had a ton of good suggestions from Instagram, from email, from all sorts of stuff. And so we're slowly going to work through your suggestions. And if you have more, you have some topics that you really want to hear us riff on, or you want to hear Brett riff on, send us a DM on Instagram, choose an email. Let us know. But anyway, maybe Brett, do you have any New Year's resolutions? Are you a resolution guy or anything like that for the year?
I'm a big goal setter. Yeah. So I think I said in the staff meeting the other day, I'm working on being on time more. I think that's a big flaw of mine. So I'm trying to work on that and respect people's time and not run behind and get here on time and all the on time things. So. Yeah.
Mine is trying to get better with dates. As you know with me, I am horrible at remembering dates, horrible at checking my calendar. I mean, the fact that I haven't screwed more things up is pretty insane.
But if you need a movie quote, you'll
yeah, I can riff that off pretty damn easy. But yeah, you asked me what next Monday is. So anyway, we're celebrating a big Packers win today, so I got the jersey on. But anyway, today we're talking about one of our favorite things, and that's the kinetic chain, Brett. And so we're going to kind of... You know, it's very easy as a young clinician to get a little overwhelmed when you hear Brett talk about the stories of Carol Levitt, and you hear about these masters and people that have been doing this for 20, 30 years to stick a needle in someone's calf and then get rid of their headache, right? But sometimes when we're learning, we just need to start a little bit local before we get global. And so we're going to kind of tell that story and how you see yourself or how you got better at doing that. And I'll kind of interject with my stories, but maybe first, Brett, I mean, tell us again the importance of treating the kinetic chain and what that all means.
Well, I think, I always say I feel like I'm the luckiest and most fortuitous person in the world to get... to have the honor of being able to see Dr. Levitt work through one of my early mentors, Dr. Clayton Skaggs. So he was the one who had originally brought me over there, and I got to watch Dr. Levitt, work through his patients. And the one thing I learned was he listened to the patient really well. He did an amazing history, but he really wasn't that obsessed with their pain was. And it was really kind of the exact opposite of what we were all taught in chiropractic school, where at least where I went to school, if you had a shoulder problem, then you did a shoulder regional, and then you couldn't treat outside that. You had to stay within what you did a regional in.
Right.
So this is just very ironic and paradoxical, really, when I started to, be seeing people like Dr. Levitt or Clayton Skaggs or others at the time who were really good at this. And I think that, the story that, keeps getting passed along and I think is so important is that the human body is so complicated and so complex. It's not like a mechanical item like your watch where you have a broken cog and you fix that and now your watch works. There's so many different things. And Dr. Levitt had a great quote. He said, "He who treats a side of pain is lost." And then he went on to say, actually, his or her patient is. So, but easier said than done, right? I mean, we tell the story, and the story that you kind of talked about in the beginning was the story that opened my eyes is when Dr. Levitt took away someone's cervicogenic headache by just dry needling the patient's soleus. Solely, no pun intended.
Yeah.
And that was just, I couldn't imagine it. Cause I just imagined myself and I imagined others, you would feel the need, especially when you're young, to do something in their cervical spine or something with the oral facial system. It just seems such a far stretch. So we tell that story because it's so inspirational,
right?
But it's not always reality for a young clinician. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to take, you know, today's episode that so we could kind of just clear that up, especially for the younger clinicians, where, you know, another idea could be, you know, you can work within proximally to where the site of complaint is, but in that area, you want to do a world-class job of making sure all the joints are moving in all planes of motion, making sure that we don't have neurologically inhibited muscles in this area, and maybe doing some soft tissue techniques in areas of muscles that might have tension, tone, and trigger points, and using those different modalities for that. And then starting there.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like you're throwing a pebble in a pond. And then, you know, if we're talking about a shoulder, well, then we're looking at the thoracic spine. Well, then we're looking at the hip joint. Well, then we're looking at the lower extremity. And I'm not saying you should do this in every case. I'm just, you know, hopefully this is inspiration for a younger clinician to start proximally if you're gaining more confidence there. And then as you work your way through this journey of our careers, then you're starting to gain more confidence to maybe start working away from the site of complaints.
Right.
And another way to start to get good at this, and I did this, and this really, really helped me out a bunch, which was auditing the whole body, deciding where you think the key portal of entry is, do your intervention, then re-audit the whole body. Mm-hmm. And that is going to tell you whether or not you are on the key link. Because right. Dr. Levitz, one of his main tenets was, through our assessment, we need to find the key link of the case.
Right.
And the key link is, as he said, was oftentimes away from the site of pain. Mm-hmm. So you have to use an auditing system. And, you know, we kind of have our snobberies on what we like, but I mean, that doesn't say that they're right. But for us, it's going to be the systems that we always talk about, but it's going to be joint play. It's going to be trigger point. It's going to be muscle length. It's going to be neurologic information. It's going to be a functional test. It's going to be, you know, any of the audits that you all know. So that is basically the playbook, and that is what you're looking to change. So that's where it's kind of easy, honestly, because all you need to do is when you get done with whatever your intervention is, just go back all your audits and see. And if you smash someone's subtalar joint into eversion, and then you go back and you check their hip mobility on their same side, and it's drastically different, then that is starting to tell the story of that you were on the key link, right? Or you blast someone's subtalar joint or talocrural joint, and you don't change anything more distally. And that would also tell you that maybe that isn't one of the key links in the case. Doesn't mean it's not important to treat, but it just tells you it's not the key link. Not surprisingly, this is where it gets like crazy exciting, is that when you nail the key link, right, then, or the key region, if you will, then everything else is going to get better throughout the whole body. And I remember hearing Pavel Kolosh talk about this a lot too early on, which was, you know, if you dry needle flexor digitorum brevis and you change a trigger point manifestation there, you're going to change the trigger points in the soft tissues throughout the body. Like, that's how integrated the human body is. And for those of you who, you know, followed Stecco and others, I mean, that's, we know we are literally connected from our plantar fascia to our occipital frontalis muscle in the front of our skull. So like, we have all these connections. So it's really not that far-fetched. I just think the reality of it is the patients kind of bully us a little bit. And the patients are, you know, they're wanting you to touch the site of complaint,
right,
which I think that sometimes, even if you know in your heart of hearts that you're on the right area, but it's away from the site of pain, that sometimes you do something in the site of pain just because you know that the patient is needing to be touched in that area, unless you have the time to really just educate them really, really well on that. I mean, and we're all in the sports world too. So, I mean, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, we have a shockwave and a laser that's going all day long here. Right. So, I mean, and those are usually not on the kinetic chain side of things. Those are usually right on the spot of complaint, you know? So it's almost like we have our modalities and our tools for the spot of the kinetic chain that's barking. But then, like, we kind of have this overreaching view of treatment of the kinetic chain. And, and really, for what it's worth, I mean, to me, that is the future of what you and I are doing. But I think, like, just to kind of sum up that part of it, what we just said, you could start tomorrow by just taking where the main area of complaint or where the main area of dysfunction is, in your opinion, do the best job you can to get joints moving that are stiff in the planes of motion that they're stiff in, reintegrating trigger points, using, you know, DNS correctives or PRI correctives, whatever you're into, to turn on muscles that have been neurologically inhibited, and just let's make it easy again. You know, like, let's quit making this so difficult and just this, you know, pie in the sky that is like, you know, we're all shooting for this thing that doesn't exist. So, I mean, at the end of the day, if you need to gain your confidence locally, do that. And then, then you start working distally. I think the big mistake, though, is to forget that second part and then to not start looking distally or globally, because, you know, we're all on this huge journey in our career. And if you don't like notice what's happening in the periphery, then like you're going to miss, like, what, when you do something in the periphery, you're going to miss how it's changing all the audits on your key link or not your key link.
Yeah. And I think it comes back to, too, there's therapy and touch, which we understand, like, especially as a young clinician, I can speak for myself, like, working locally is how you get good results early on, which helps fill your schedule. But it comes down to what we've talked to a million times on this podcast, and that's changing the function.
Yes.
You know, like, if you just change the symptom by rubbing on a muscle or a tendon or a ligament or things like that, you did a huge service to that person because their pain syndrome may be gone. But if you don't go back then and educate on function and change function, change the kinetic chain or the reason maybe that got there in the first place, they're due for a flare up more than likely, right? Mm-hmm. And they're likely, if it's an athlete or something like that, maybe you're leaving them susceptible to something different down the road.
Right. So. Yeah, exactly. Or like, I mean, just as an example, let's just say that we determine that scapular stabilization is a key part of the case. So, and maybe they have some kind of, you know, neurologic complaint. So we could do a neurodynamic test is an audit. We could, our intervention could be scapular stabilization, i.e. DNS or whatever you're into. And then we can come back. And I think it'll start to blow your mind to see like how you start to mix and match these different systems, even from an assessment standpoint. And it's really going to kind of expose what the key link is, meaning we may be using neurodynamics in a case, for example, but the actual key link in the case may actually be stabilization.
Right.
So, and that's like really where it gets fun, is because it's also mixing and matching of different techniques also to get us quicker to the portal of entry, or get us to, you know, being pain-free or whatever it might be.
Right,
so.
Right. Well, I think it comes back to your goals with your patient. You know, we talk a lot about, too, if is it a Ferrari or a Ford Escort. You know, sometimes you have a Ford Escort that just needs their pain syndrome taken care of, and you understand during that day, but, you know, that's maybe where you need to keep them on board longer. Those are some patients that need to be seen a little bit more often, or to be managed, as we would call it in here, versus someone that you're not going to fix, you know, long-term or short-term. Fixed, if you want to put that in parentheses.
And I mean, the statement that you just said is so paramount. I mean, it's so important if you are going to buy into this, because these aren't one and done cases when we're treating the kinetic chain. It's going to take you weeks. Sometimes it's going to take months. But you know what I always think of, you know, myself when I'm working with anybody, even if it's a 90-year-old patient, is I am returning their musculoskeletal system back to their first year of their life when everything was neurologically perfect. For those of you working with pediatric patients, the next time you're with a 10-month-old baby that's developing physiologically, feel their soft tissues, feel their joints, do a neurodynamic test on them and feel how there's no tension in the, in the system when you do that. Check their deep tendon reflexes. You are looking at neurologic perfection at that point. So what I always imagine in my mind, and this is kind of a mind F, but I'm imagining that I'm restoring the patient that's in front of me back to that state, which gets us to this crazy philosophical question of when is our patient actually done with treatment? And that's a trick question, because if you're wanting to completely resolve all the audits that we've been talking about, well, then that patient's going to be with you for a while, you know, and that trust me, you'll hear me say over and over and over again that in my opinion, I think that is okay as long as they're not becoming solely dependent on you, and as long as you're continuing to change function and we can document that we're changing function on them. Why would you not do that? Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I think that's, especially if you're talking about the pain side of things, pain is so adaptive in the human body, which means your central nervous system is literally doing everything it can, even in a crisis, to try to help you with pain. Right. So what ends up happening in our world is you end up being left with major dysfunction. However, your central nervous system is no longer perceiving it as threat and pain. Your central nervous system is just adapted to it.
Sure.
So if we're only using pain as a subjective reason of whether or not we should get rid of our patient today, you are missing out on so much. And I understand we're in the evidence-based group. You know, we are in that camp. But like, to think that you're going to see a new patient today one time, treat them, give them three exercises, and that you don't need to follow up with them, that case exists. I mean, there's outliers, mm-hmm. but that's not the reality.
Right.
And for those of you who are interested in treating athletes, the athletes, that's not what they're wanting. And I think this is where we all get a little bit in a tussle a little bit, because we just, you know, we have the evidence-based group that is telling us we're seeing our patients too much. We have, you know, obviously the group in our profession that's completely overutilizing care. No one wants to be lumped in that group as chiropractors. I think that's like what it all comes down to, is that's why this is hard for like the evidence-based group, is because myself included, you just don't want to be, oh, they kept me coming back type thing. But that's where I think, like, if you can do a really good job of explaining to the patient what you're doing as far as like full body treatment and kinetic chain treatment, then I mean, how lucky are they to see Taylor Primmer? You know, everybody deserves to see Taylor, you know, like, so that's where I think that is a really, really valid, important point. I think that because most of the people listening to this are in that ethical group, it becomes a problem. But then, you know, around here, you know, we see so many of our patients monthly or whatever, and no one's walking around town saying, well, they kept me coming back. Like, that's just, no, they understand what good care actually means and what it takes. And an analogy I sometimes use too is that, you know, I asked, you know, whoever I'm talking to, could you cut your own hair?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, now that my hair is getting thin, I do cut my own hair, I guess. But I mean, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have cut my own hair.
Right.
So like, even though you could, typically doesn't mean that you're going to do that. I mean, once a month, you're going to go have somebody help you out, you know, like, so I mean, I think like you don't have to like feel bad that you're checking in on patients. Like, that is totally fine in our opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but you know, especially if you're working with athletes, I mean, they're going to want to be worked on, you know, quite a bit, and they're going to want manual therapy. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have manual therapy in your skill set and you think you're going to give them two corrective exercises and say, we'll see how that does, I can promise you, you won't be back there again.
Right. Right.
So it, I guess to what you said earlier, which is a good point. I mean, who are you treating? You know, do we have a Ferrari? Do we have a Ford Escort? But I mean, here we're kind of humanitarians. We want to be there for everybody. Yeah. So like, you know, we expect you to have a little bit of tact to walk in there and recognize what the patient wants from you and being able to deliver that service.
One thing it brings up a good point too, is that, with those patients that we're working on, this is a perfect example or a perfect opportunity for you to get better at the kinetic chain, but then also to educate on the kinetic chain. Meaning every visit should look a little bit different in those monthly patients. And that, I think that's another good way to do it. Yeah, you're still probably working on the same things, but you know, every time you're re-auditing, you're re-looking at those things that you found the last however many times you've seen them, approaching from a different way if it's not changing, or finding something new, like, that's a great way to kind of work on those kinetic chains.
You have a 65-year-old patient, new patient tomorrow, who's starting to get the front end of spinal stenosis, let's just say. You palpate their thoracic spine. It is stiff as an absolute board. And what I didn't know when I was young was I thought, you know, like, I would lightly lean into it, I'd start to mobilize them, but I thought like getting that joint to cavitate is just, you know, that's no longer becomes one of my goals. However, what I learned over time, I can slowly but surely start incorporating movement into their spine. And then 2 months later, literally, and I mean, I'm not saying you're seeing them three times a week, but let's just say weekly, I don't know, sure, every other week, then finally you do. It's like loosening the top of a jar of pickles. Then you start to able to cavitate and get mobility in the joint. And that is where, and Lin Fei was talking about this for a while. It's just a lot of us, we're not ready to hear that message. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, like, that is so important. So the hard part is we always joke with our older patients, they're so tight as they age.
Yeah.
They want you to fix them in one visit, and they don't want to pay for that one visit. Right. So that's like where that becomes a little bit challenging. But I'm just learned to be 100% honest with them and just confront them. You know, just say like, you know, we're heading in the right direction. This is still stiffer than I want it to be, but you know, I think we're heading there. But and Dr. Levitt taught me this also, and this is also Lin Fei thought. I mean, if you have one segment of your spine that is unable to move, it will be compensated somewhere in your body, right? So of course we're giving them home exercise. They're doing mobilization at home. We're auditing that. But I mean, you only got one ride of this with this body, right? You know, like, so to me, treating the musculoskeletal system is one of the most important things in the healthcare team that you can do for somebody. And you shouldn't be ashamed of that. Yeah. Like, you should swerve into that, and you should be proud that you're a chiropractor or a physical therapist or a trainer, whatever it might be. And that this is why you were put on this earth, to like help people restore the function of their of their carcass as they move along in life,
their meat suit or whatever the hell you want to call it,
right? Their earth costume.
Yeah, exactly. So and there's so many good examples of kinetic, like treating the kinetic chain down the road that, you know, we can kind of talk about. And I know you have some amazing examples, Brett, but I think at the end of the day, if we can sum up what we just talked about, is, you know, taking the time, and we talked about it in our other episodes when we talked about audits, taking the time to audit and paying attention to them visit to visit, whatever that looks like. If that's writing it down, if that's putting your AHR, if you have a good mind for it, whatever that means. But if you don't pay attention to those things, you're missing out on the little miracles that you're making in these patients, and you're missing out on your ability to like educate them into what you're doing and how amazing it is what you're doing.
Yeah. And what would you do today if a patient walked into you and didn't have any pain? Mm-hmm. We always say nothing confuses a McKinsey practitioner more than somebody walking in without pain.
Sorry to interrupt this episode, guys. Hope you're enjoying it. Real quick, we have an amazing, amazing opportunity. The DNS World Congress is coming to Chesterfield, Missouri this June 14th through the 16th, 2024. If you guys attended our NDS or our Neurodynamics Congress, you know that this is something that's very close to Brett and I's heart, something that we are going to keep doing and keep doing and keep doing. So this year's Congress is all about DNS, dynamic neuromuscular stabilization. This is literally like looking into the ocean, as Brett says. This is the lens that we look through each and every one of our patients with. And this is going to be an amazing opportunity because Pavel is back in town. So the originator, the creator of DNS, Pavel Kolash, is coming to the States for the first time in 5 or 6 years. I don't even know how long it's been. He's bringing along with him Elena Kobosova, which is literally the backbone of DNS. She's one of the most underrated neurologists in the world. So we're super excited to hear from her. Marcella Safarova, if you haven't heard her speak, she is literally the queen of pediatrics and musculoskeletal health. We also are going to have almost every single UNS instructor at the Congress who's going to be speaking. It's going to include demos, lectures, hands-on. We're going to have, as always, a get-together afterwards with your chance to talk to these guys face-to-face and have a couple drinks with them. This is going to be a great, great opportunity. There's also, it's a great price too, especially for students. It's only $4.99. So be sure to use the code DNSstudent to get your discount on that. For more information, or if you have questions, go to gestaltedu.com/DNS-Congress. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Let me ask everybody this question. If you knew somebody was going to have a massive heart attack tomorrow, so today's Sunday, so tomorrow they're going to have a heart attack that's going to end their life tomorrow, do you think through blood work there would be signs of that heart attack on its way on Friday? Absolutely, there would be. Mm-hmm. So like, our job is to, and I think it's really weird in people that are musculoskeletal medicine, we wait for things to start hurting them from a mm-hmm. symptom standpoint. If you think about that, it wouldn't make any sense in other branches of medicine. You know, like, your whatever catastrophic thing that's about to happen to you, if you did the right blood work, you did the right assessment or testing early on, you would be able to pick up on the fact that, wow, the things are starting to get a little bit awry. Maybe in a heart attack example, the CRP is high, the homocysteine's high, the obvious one, blood pressure's high, or whatever you're doing to whatever metrics. So, but I think the point is, we don't have to wait for you to have a massive heart attack. There's only 50% chance that you would survive that. Right. You don't have to wait till you have a low back that is so bad that you can't walk to your mailbox without both your legs going numb, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I think that's the dilemma, but if you start to put perspective to it, then you start to understand, like, we actually have a really important job on this planet to try to help all the people in our respective communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better.
And I mean, I think that, you know, there's been, and there's been others too in the world of physical therapy. We've had Gray Cook, who we've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with, Gary Gray up in Michigan, who's also a physical therapist. Those two are beating the functional drum like nobody else's business, you know? So it's not just the chiropractic side, it's also the physical therapy side. But like a lot of us are kind of combining different modalities. So it doesn't just involve the joint system. It involves the muscles, the system, the neurodynamic side of things, just a neurologic examination period. I mean, all those things can become audits when we're looking at how to assess and treat the kinetic chain.
It's beautiful. And I think, you know, we kind of tease it at the beginning, but getting better at this, especially as a young clinician working locally, we've kind of beat that drum a little bit. But maybe, Brett, what's some good examples of maybe some patterns that you've seen throughout the years, or some things to, like, I don't know, start looking for maybe kinetically that we can kind of start drawing in conclusions, people that maybe haven't started to think this way?
Well, I think one thing is, you know, is the evidence there. So the, you know, the fancy term is regional interdependence. If you want to do a Google search on that, and the original paper that opened my eyes quite a bit to this whole idea, from the evidence and research side of things, was Cleland and Suki's paper. So if you Google John Cleland or Suki, kinetic chain or regional interdependence, this paper will pop up. And there's all kinds of like just linkages in there to kind of to help you with this. But I think that, you know, I always tell the story of, you know, practicing in a small town where, you know, when I was treating locally, which no one was worse about it than myself, that, you know, these patients, they did initially get better and they got better quickly. The problem was they didn't always stay better. Mm-hmm. And because what we are in a small town here, I got to see these people and I would think that they're doing better and I would see them out and they would have relapsed or they would have done something else or seen somebody else. And finally, one day I just said, enough's enough. Like, I don't care if people do think that, you know, he keeps me coming back. I'm like, if I do nothing else, I'm going to start changing function or start working on changing function better than I was. And I slowly started to realize that if I communicate well with my patient, I educate well with my patient, they don't bat an eye on it. It's only us that gets in our own way.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to say like maybe 0.01% of patients might not be on board, but you probably don't want them anyways, you know? Yeah, so that's not a big deal.
I think for me, the biggest one, biggest eye opener for me is the expo study.
Yeah.
So, you know, we knocked a McKenzoid, so we'll bring it back to him. But, you know, expos, I mean, if you look at that study, yeah, there's some flaws in it. But I mean, my goodness, if you just start looking to the spine for these extremity problems, you're going to have some crazy success, which may kind of explain a lot of the success chiropractors have had for so many years of just treating the spine and helping with distal problems. And so it's kind of a cool thought, if you will, just on that. Even if all you want to do is adjust patients all day long, you're going to help a lot of people because of this this idea, which is the spine can cause some crazy referrals and crazy radiation into the extremities that maybe we didn't even think about.
I think to go back on your original question, because I got on a tangent, which was some surprises, I guess, in my career. I think the importance of the cervicothoraco and the thoracolumbar junctions, and then, you know, Dr. Levitt and Faye talked about like four key transitional areas. I personally believe there's actually a fifth, which is like between T4 and T6. So right where you have kind of the meeting point of the two lordosis is in a point of kyphosis, which with normal development, that's going to be between T4 and T6. I think that's another key transitional zone. And I think that like, no matter what your patient comes in with, like doing a really good job in those areas. And actually Dr. Seaman said on our podcast, one of our early ones, he said, even if you're not good at palpation, just smash the transitional areas and just let it be. You'll be exactly okay. Right. And I think that's like a really, really important point, especially for the spine, but also in other areas. And I think that, you know, if you're dealing with a distal complaint, not to forget the more proximal segments. So just to keep it simple, you know, the importance of a foot and ankle case of still being aware of what could be going on in the hip. If we're talking about wrist elbow, then, you know, always paying attention to what's going on with the shoulder girdle. And I think like that's probably some pretty good advice as far as like, you know, some starting points.
That's right. Yeah. We talked about TMJ on this case too. Mm-hmm. The jaw, the closers of the mouth. You know, if somebody has a posterior headache, I mean, my goodness.
Thank you for teeing that up. Let's just say a patient comes in with cervicogenic/tension headache, okay? And you know, obviously, you know, you're wanting to do all this stuff with the cervical spine, but you do a real simple masseter PIR. You do a masseter PIR to relax the muscles in the orofacial system. You take away their headache and you completely change the range of motion of their neck because you've changed the soft tissues of the cervical spine. You've now learned from a very kinetic chain viewpoint that the main problem of that case is actually in the orofacial system. It's actually not their cervical spine. Although there's things that are tight and stiff there, that's not actually the key link.
Right. Right.
And I don't want this to come across as some all-knowing, like we are playing daily with it. You know, that's like right. You don't know till you start playing though. Yeah, yeah. And if you're not curious in practice, like it gets boring and you're just like, you're just punching widgets. So you got to play a little bit to see like, well, if I change function of the hip, what am I doing in other, you know, what is that doing to other areas of the body?
That's right.
And it's like watching your kids grow. So like on an auditing process, the patient doesn't feel or understand what 20 degrees more of hip internal rotation means in their case, unless you're there to point it out to them.
Right.
So like it's, you know, they, that it's
just borrowed trivia at that point.
Yeah, exactly. So like sometimes I think it's important to kind of let them understand like what you're doing and what you're working on. And I mean, besides there being a biomechanical benefit, maybe you're helping a little bit on the placebo side of things by just, you know, the reason you're here is because we're working on this. And I always try to let the patient realize, even if I'm seeing them on a monthly basis, like this is what our goal, these are like your, I always tell them the story, like I've had a shoulder surgery and a knee surgery, like for the rest of my life, those are two areas that I got to work on. So like everybody's got kind of their landmines and their own kinetic chain. So like we're always, you give me one of my patients' name and I'll be able to tell you probably like what the key long-term goal with them is. And like, don't lose sight of that because that's kind of what you're shooting for. And you don't have to do it today. You don't have to do it tomorrow, but like, that's what we're headed toward.
Yeah. That's a good way to think too. That keeps you excited too. It keeps you wanting to come back to work every day and little things like that. Like, and it can get the patient back engaged. You know, like get them back engaged with the case. Sometimes maybe they're not feeling the progress, but then you can show them that progress and that gets them back. Okay, I'm going to get better. Things are happening. Yes, we're working on the right things. The things I'm doing at home are important because we're changing these things.
Well, and I mean, here's the irony. We haven't even said this yet, which is not surprisingly, if you do a great job of treating the kinetic chain, the area of complaint is typically going to respond. Right. I mean, from a pain standpoint, you know, and then the other thing too, is like, we know the patient is here because they're originally in pain.
Sure.
We're just like, have made it our life mission to basically make people look outside of the pain. But I mean, we have our medical doctors here. I mean, we're doing Medrol dose packs. We're doing prednisone. We're doing cortisone when the case needs it. We just want the average contemporary chiropractor, physical therapist, or ATC to be like willing to take a step outside of the box and look a little bit more globally, but you know, also respect the fact that, you know, this is where the symptoms are. So have a little bit of tact and know how to handle that situation.
Yeah, that's good. Great conversation. Mm-hmm. Any last thoughts, Brett, on kinetic chain?
I just think like the starting point, like we said, I mean, start proximally, you know, like be world-class in your ability to reintegrate trigger points, joint motion, and turn on muscles in whatever area you're in. Do that. Then, like I said, it's like a pebble in a pond, then start working out from that.
Right.
And I think that's a really healthy way just to start. That way you don't get overwhelmed with, well, Dr. Levitt put a needle in someone's calf muscle and took away their headache.
Right.
He was also 90 years old when he did that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, I doubt Dr. Levitt, as talented as he was, did that when he was, you know, 25. So
a piece of advice I got from you and Corey Campbell was to have a routine.
Oh yeah.
Routine Love of auditing. And, you know, Corey does that a lot of the adjust-a-thons, or he teaches a full spine, he'll take you through his whole palpation routine. I think that that's a really good thing of just committing yourself to a routine. So like something we do is shoes come off. Like you automatically just palpate the feet, work through the soft tissues of the lower extremity, up to the hip, spine, shoulders, cervical spine, jaw. You know, like little things like that, just get in the habit of doing that whatever that system looks like for you and for your office. And the more you do that, the more you'll be able to then kind of work through the Connect chain quickly. And it's not taking you forever to then come back and re-audit and decide where that portal might be.
Yeah. One of Dr. Andrew's fellows here in St. Louis, he actually told me years ago, he said, I'm doing a Lockman on every single person. He's like, it's selfishly because it's given me practice. So, and I think that's a good example. I mean, if for no other reason, it's just giving you more practice to be good at. But like you said, I love that idea. And I love that when Corey does that at the Adjust Times, when he goes through like the joint routine.
Right.
And I think, you know, it depends on your personality. I'm a little bit obsessive compulsive. So I kind of compartmentalize all the different, the way that I audit the body. But I think like if you start auditing the body tomorrow, your grandma is going to be impressed with the results that you're getting. But because you're not auditing and checking it, you just kind of like, and I mean, humans don't understand 10% of improvement very well, meaning like humans are going to bitch, right? So they're going to come in and they might tell you they're the same. But like start auditing and then report back to them and see how they change their story. And they will, you'll start hearing this. You'll start hearing, actually, I think I have been quite a bit better.
Now that you say that. Now that you say that.
But people have to justify being at your office. So keep that in mind.
That's exactly right. Shout out to our girl, Lindsay Muma.
Yeah. Love. I don't know what it is about this shirt. It's like, it's comfortable. It's very wearable. Cheeky. It's got some. Yeah,
there you go. It's got a joke on the back too. So anyway, we love you, Lindsay. Her and Erica Bolin will be here next year or this year. Line. We just talked about it.
We got to get them back for.
I know.
Well, we still owe them for.
Yeah, the tattoo thing
that hurt.
Go back to a previous episode with us if you haven't heard about that story. Basically, they got a tattoo on our credit card. But anyway, look on gestaltedu.com/courses. I know it's on there. I'm bad with dates. This is me. I should have been better with that. I should have had it right away on the spot. But anyway, I know you already got an ad for the DNS Congress, but Brett and I are so looking forward to this. It's not every day that Pavel Kolaj comes to the United States. It's not every day that Pavel Kolaj is in the Midwest.
Yeah.
So this is your opportunity to see a modern day Carol Levitt, basically.
Yeah. I mean, he is. It's hard to even like say what Pavel Kolaj is. But I mean, if we had a Mount Rushmore, he's on it. He's on it and he's still alive. Like he's that talented, that good. And as time's gone on, he just doesn't travel to the U.S. like he used to. So this would be a great, perfect time.
Yeah, it really will be. And I mean, we have so many great instructors lined up for it. Basically, every American instructor. We also have Marcella coming from the Czech Republic and Elena Kobosova. And so those two alone are worth the price of admittance because they are just unbelievable. But we're going to cover all sorts of great things and it'll be a great
And there's weekend. Always new wrinkles we always
oh,
add
yeah.
in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So Move Mentors. April 13th and 14th. I had to look it up quick. So, and then the DNS World Congress is June 14th to the 16th. But anyway, guys, I hope you like this solo episode with Brett and I. Keep monitoring your patients, auditing them, looking at the kinetic chain, and you're going to be surprised with how many amazing changes you're making in your patients.
And don't be a hypocrite like I was. Don't say that you're a functionalist. But you're still just treating everybody two times, and like once they're out of pain, then they're gone.
Yep.
So if you're gonna say you're treating function, you're gonna have to be looking globally and treating the kinetic chain. Start proximally, work your way distally to gain your confidence, and then someday maybe you can put a needle in someone's soleus and take their headache away, when like Dr. Levitt did.
Love it. All right, guys, have a great day. Good luck with patients, and we'll see you next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Gestalt Education Show. If you liked it, share it, subscribe to it, send it to your friends, send it to someone that needs to hear this message. We really want everyone to be able to tune in and get the best clinical advice that they can, which we're hoping that we're giving to you with these special guests. So if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us, or if you have any suggestions on upcoming conversations, let us know. For a list of our upcoming courses, we're adding them all the dang time. So go to gestaltedu.com, click on courses, and they'll all be right there for you. All right, have a good day.